problems, or things problems we think we know how to solve hard. They could be alternatively titled Solving ODEs is Hard. We've heard about a lot of very complicated problems, but this is one that I think we all think we know how to do. You plug it into Mathematica and it gives you an answer. The context for this problem for me is producing pictures like this. And that means solving a whole bunch of ODEs at each pixel and doing it fast, doing it accurately, and doing it over and over and over again. So this is an image of accretion flow around a black hole. I'll show you some equations in a moment. So here's the problem. I have some image plane. Imagine we have a CCD, like in your cell phone. And I want to know how bright something is at a pixel. And to do that, I need to look at emitting plasma around some black hole somewhere. And I need to follow the trajectory of photons, add up all the little bits of light that are emitted, and subtract off all the little bits that are absorbed. And this is mid-20th century physics. We have all the equations. You have to construct null geodesics, and you have to do radiative transfer, and we're done. What am I going to do with the rest of my time? Well, it's a little bit more complicated if we want to include polarization. Now we have some more radiative transfer equations, a full set of Stokes parameters. So that's four of those, I, Q, U, and V, different ways of writing down polarization. And we also have a fiducial direction that's parallelly transported along our trajectory. Of course, you can make this arbitrarily more complicated, adding more and more processes. This is really a roulette wheel for Monte Carlo. I'm going to stick with just polarization. What makes this hard is that we really have a large variety of scales. Okay, so for example, gravity. The emission region can go out to 1,000 gravitational radii, but of course, things are happening down near the horizon. So that means we have three orders of magnitude dynamic range right off the bat in how gravity varies. The emissivities, we can have small knots within our accretion flow varying. It's another two orders of magnitude. Alternatively, we can have absorption, high optical depths. Optical depths of thousands or millions are not crazy. That gets us to nine orders of magnitude in our dynamic range. And you can have rotation from things like Faraday rotation. It's an astrophysical process that causes polarization to rotate. And that in the galactic center happens very rapidly. And so again, we can talk about nine orders of magnitude in dynamic range. And those are the kinds of scales that we need to be able to resolve. And when we do this, we would like to produce a pipeline, all right? And that means that you give me your gravity, and you give me your accretion flow, I can spit back an image. And we don't want to unduly bias this pipeline towards one theory of gravity, one metric, or one accretion flow. So that means it should be extensible. So we should be able to apply this pipeline to a lot of different problems. It also had better be robust. Little things like a plasma density going to zero somewhere shouldn't blow the whole thing up. And it has to be fast enough. What do I mean by fast enough? I don't really care about how fast it is in CPU hours. I care about how fast it is in Avery hours. I'm Avery. Human hours, okay? And so, you know, you don't want to spend a whole lot of time getting that last 1% out. And some general rules of thumb, and I'll give a bunch of examples of all of these. First, think. Before you compute anything, before you write a line of code, you always have to think about what kind of algorithms, but even more than that, how specifically you wish to implement those algorithms. But not too much. Probably the only one around here who will tell you that. Famous quote from Donald Knuth, father of LaTeX and other fancy computer science things. Premature optimization is the root of all evil. Okay, if you find yourself optimizing in ways that constrain dramatically the structure of your code, that's premature. I'll show you some examples of that. Second, all of these integration schemes that people talk about, all these numerical schemes, are fundamentally approximations. And we really should care about how good an approximation they are. We should care about the accuracy of those approximations, and we should be checking them. Okay, and I want to accurately produce images, so that's going to be an important bit for me. And finally, this is sort of a zeroth order optimization. Don't spend time calculating things where they don't matter. Itay talked about that a little bit when he talked about doing these integrals around the on-shell values, on-shell regions in the phase space. Don't waste time where it doesn't matter. Okay, so an explicit example, thinking about constructing null geodesics. Most ordinary differential equation solvers that exist expect systems of first order ODEs. And that's a pain in the ass, because it means you have to take your nice high order ODE and split it up. But at the same time, it's an opportunity if you choose wisely. Here's one example of how to break it up. Okay, it's sort of a canonical example for a high-order ODE, but this is a poor choice. So even in Schwarzschild, for some set of coordinates, I know that the Christoffel symbols diverge, and that means I can have catastrophic precision loss right around those points. All right, so we didn't think enough there. Perhaps a better way to do it would be a Hamiltonian decomposition that I think most of us saw in a first-year GR course. You define a Hamiltonian for your particle, or I call it a dispersion relation, plug it into Hamilton's equations, and you get back out some equations of motion. It's very similar, but not quite identical to the previous decomposition. This also suffers. If you take y1 minus x, this. Okay, so this is an identification. y1 is x, and y2 is that. Okay, in this case, y1 is x, and now y2 is, one shouldn't take the indices on my y's as being properly covariant. Okay, they're not, they're really just labels. But it's the covariant component of the wave vector. But this also has the same kinds of problems as the previous example. However, one of the nice things you can do here is rescale your dispersion relation by any function, rescale your equations then by whatever function you want. This corresponds to choosing a non-affine parametrization of the ray, and you can choose that to avoid divergences at horizon. This is a slightly smarter way to do it. If we have a scheme for integrating it up, we also need initial conditions. You know, naturally, what happens is photons get emitted over here and come flying in random directions, and some of them get to us. That's, of course, a bad way to do it. We integrate backwards in time. So it's a subtle distinction, a subtle point, but an important one. We start at the pixel in our image plane and go backwards and figure out what the ray trajectory is. Now, you could have gone a lot further in this. For Kerr, there are ways to write down the entire null geodesic in closed form in terms of elliptical integrals. Of course, you have to go compute elliptical integrals, but we can do that fast. But this is overthinking it, because this is specific to Kerr. You want to plug in something that's not Kerr, you're out of luck. You got to go recode a whole new thing. And secondly, something I'll point out later, this is really the definition of premature optimization, because you produce a lot of effort for very little payoff. It turns out that these null geodesic constructions don't take much time. So that was null geodesics. We could talk about the radiative transfer as well. If we're just caring about intensity, here's the radiative transfer equation. This actually is more or less right for the relativistic case. It's just what we mean by the emissivity, the absorption coefficient, and I nu change. Okay, I can give you exact definitions for all of that, so it's entirely correct. And I can solve this. I think even I can solve this, a non-particle theorist. I can write it down in closed form. Okay, of course, I only care about what the value of that intensity is at the image plane, so now I have a bunch of definite integrals. And in fact, I don't care which order I perform those in. I could go backwards, so I could be integrating this up along the ray, going backwards, and I'm feeling awfully clever, because then I can rewrite this whole thing in terms of integrals that start off at the image plane and go backwards. So I'm kind of integrating up the emission inverse in time. And that's all because I can rewrite the solution analytically. But I've been too clever by half. There are good things about this. I get an estimate of that optical depth right off the bat. So as I measure distance back, I know how optically thick it is. I know how opaque it is. And I then can stop. Once my optical depth gets much bigger than 1, say around 10, I know nothing beyond that is going to be visible. And so I can say, stop wasting your time. Don't sit there and try to integrate into optically thick regions. That's focusing my efforts where stuff is visible. All right? The bad part of this reverse integration scheme isn't possible for polarization. So I've unduly biased myself towards a very specific kind of problem. And very often we do want polarization because people measure that. And the ugly thing is that there's no way to gauge the accuracy of these integrals of intensity. All right? I can define some sort of precision, but I don't really know how good it is. I don't know how to measure the accuracy. I'll explain that in a moment. So how do we do this? I'm not going to do anything much more complicated than stuff you can find in numerical recipes. Runge-Kutta, I think we've all seen. First order Runge-Kutta is just Eulerian integration. Just extrapolate. Second order is you make a mid-course correction. You can go up to whichever order you like. The magic here is that this Cash-Karp algorithm points out that you can construct fifth order and fourth order solutions with the same set of intermediate points. For the same amount of computational effort, you can get fourth order and fifth order accurate solutions. And why does that matter? Because now I can actually measure, in some sense, how big the errors are. All right, so it's not just precision. It's not saying, well, fifth order is high order, so I must be doing well. I can tell how bad I've done. And that means if I have some idea of how good I want to do, I can tell how big a step size I need to take. So that means out where things are varying very slowly, very, very far away from the black hole, I can automatically tell that I can take big step sizes. Where they're varying very fast down near black holes, I can tell that I need to take very small step sizes and maintain a prescribed accuracy. All right. The expense of that is that I have to choose what accuracy I want. But I think the important message here is you choose it regardless. You either choose it by setting it to something, or you choose it by choosing H and don't know what it was. Okay, so at least here, I have an idea of what accuracy I end up with. And even though it does allow this adaptive stepping up to a point, it's possible to miss interesting regions. So you do have to supplement these kinds of schemes with separate adaptive limits, something like saying, don't let the radius change by too much, or don't let the optical depth change by too much. There's some obvious choices for these kinds of error scales. You know, if we're integrating up angles, maybe we say it's small compared to pi. If we're integrating up something that we're also going to integrate up, like integrating up the four momentum, the wave four vector, we don't really care if this deviates by some amount. What we really care about is how much the trajectory deviates. And so in this context, we might make this proportional to a derivative so that the integrated value varies by some amount that's fixed. Unfortunately, we don't have those kinds of choices for the rate of transfer because we don't know what scales we're looking at. In this image, you can see there's a variety of different scales. Over here, it's awfully dark. Over here, it's awfully bright. Maybe here, it's good enough to get the intensity to 50%, but here, I want it to 1%. But 1% of what? Until I've made the image, I don't know what the brightest spot is. Well, you can tell a convergence. Sure. And that's what we do. We do a poor man's richest in extrapolation. So we take a. So what we do is we take a zeroth order a solution for the Stokes parameters just from Eulerian integration and use that as our error. It's effectively doing Richardson extrapolation. All right? But I'd point out that convergence isn't necessarily proof that it's right either. I mean, we see this with codes like Zeus all the time, where on problems that have high degrees of symmetry, even though they are supposed to have converged, you produce very erroneous results. All right? So in a number of instances, precision does not necessarily mean accuracy. And so you need external validation, external quality checks. It's hard to come by those. In the case I have, there are a couple examples. One is I know this dispersion relation has to be zero, so I can come up with some sort of average value of it. Alternatively, I know in some cases the components of the waveform vector might be conserved. Yeah? No. You assume. Yeah. Exactly.
But is there some sort of rule of thumb for which one of them are convergent and which one of them is asymptotic?
Well, so I think the story is that as long as you choose H small enough, they're convergent.
So it's an ODE.
But it's an ODE. Yeah.
It's an ODE. There's a unique solution. As long as you do the right job, it's gonna converge. It's gonna be the right solution. There's a unique one. The problem is that if your step is too large, then you could be going way far. And it would be convergent, but your step is so large that you're way off. By numerical analysis, would tell you
that. Okay, and that's just a note. So I think Luis just said some statement about secular errors. So that's how you get far, far away. Okay, there are certain sorts of equations that cause trouble. One obvious one that shows up for me a lot is rotations. I mean, we know the solution to this, but we don't end up with that.
Might as well secular, because you have to believe it's in the line.
So what do I mean by secular? Well, I mean that the errors keep adding up. You watch things exponentially diverge. All right. So we know a solution, and of course it doesn't exponentially diverge. You know, the modulus of these two, the sum of the squares had better be constant, but it doesn't turn out that way frequently. So you can apply different schemes as well. All right. So in addition to checking some sort of external quality checks, you can be aware of certain classes of equations and certain classes of terms, and produce separate algorithms that analytically solve them. All right. So the general scheme for producing those kinds of pictures is something like this. We start on a pixel far away from the black hole. We integrate our positions backwards. We get a trajectory. We also get an optical depth. And we get some sort of sanity check. And we do this in this way we thought carefully about, which gets us near horizons without real problems. We stop when things get into regimes that we don't care about. Things like optically thick regions, very near horizons, or running away from the region of interest into empty dark space. With the ray trajectory constructed, we compute our error scale for the Stokes parameters and integrate that in our adaptive way, effectively providing a poor man's version of Richardson extrapolation. And at the end of the day, we check our diagnostics and make sure that what we've done makes sense. Yeah?
Fixed background.
So the point was that
you're not solving the Einstein equations to get the method. So you could choose nicer code. If you really have were near the horizon, why not just choose Eddington Finkelstein or some other ingoing, outgoing?
Absolutely. No, that's certainly one other problem, one other solution. Frequently, a lot of the solutions that I have for accretion flows are in Boyer-Lindquist.
I see.
So I want to stick with that. But that's a perfectly reasonable alternative solution.
You shouldn't be getting close to the horizon if you go backwards in time. So do you get close to the horizon?
Yeah, because we're going backwards in time from us towards the black hole.
Right, because it's a bunch of rays. They go wherever you want to go.
Yeah.
But not inside the horizon.
Not inside, but right
around.
They
get close enough.
They get close to it, yeah.
Okay.
That's what that shadow is. So after all of this work, we have the Stokes parameters at one pixel, and so we have to do this again and again and again. How many times? Well, this picture is about 2,000 pixels across. Well, maybe not the picture that you see here, but the one I calculated, 2,000 pixels across. Okay, so it's about 2,000 pixels across. Okay, and so that's a lot of times. That's a 4 million times. Again, we can apply our maxim: don't do work where it doesn't matter. This is sort of adaptive refinement of the image. Where it's dark, we don't need to worry about it too much. Where it's bright or things are changing rapidly, we can resolve. Continue to improve our resolution. There are a number of potential criteria for doing this, but again, this is just applying the maximum. Don't focus on where the action is. Don't do work where it doesn't matter. And finally, let me get to a little bit about mature optimization. So constructing those geodesics takes 10 ODEs, right? We have 4 position, 4 momenta, optical depth, and our sanity check, okay? But these are very fast. And the reason is because the metric coefficients tend not to depend on too much. They tend to be relatively easy to calculate. This constitutes about 1% of the computation time. So this is why going through the process of doing this in terms of elliptic integrals for very specialized cases is a waste of time, because at best you save 1%. On the other hand, the radio transfer stuff involves at least 8 ODEs, 4 for the Stokes parameters, 4 for our fiducial direction. These are slow. And the reason why they're slow is because the emissivities and the absorption coefficients are complicated functions and take a lot of time to compute. And that takes 99% of the time. So optimizing this is a waste. Optimizing this is really where the action is. Okay? And so you can, one, try to expend a whole lot of effort optimizing those, and we do that. After doing this, it takes me about 10 to 30 minutes to make an image of something like 1,000 by 1,000 pixels on my laptop. All right, that's like a lunchtime in Chad Hanna units. The simplest models that I look at have something like 10 parameters. Okay, so even with a very coarse sampling of all 10 of those parameters, at lunchtime scales, we're talking about 10,000 years on my laptop. That's alien civilization time scales. All right. With some cleverness, we can get rid of 5 of those parameters. We can make them easy parameters, parameters that correspond to rotations or something like this, or luminosity scaling, flux scaling. But we still end up wanting to compute something like 10 to the 5 images for our core sampling. That's months. That's a vacation time scale. That looks like a nice place to visit. But this problem is embarrassingly parallelizable. So maybe instead of one computer, I use two computers or more. This has not escaped video game manufacturers, right? This is essentially what a GPU does, highly parallelizable calculator for producing images in video games like this. So we can thank all those people who stay home, spend their vacations playing video games for our fancy computers. And the way that we parallelize this is just by giving each pixel to the next process. Okay, so this is kind of an embarrassingly simple case. The nice thing about this is it kind of ergodically balances the load. You assume that every process then gets an equal smattering of the image. If we said the top row is process one and the second row is process two, et cetera, we might have process one done right away because there's nothing there, whereas the processes that spend time tracing rays that go near the black hole, this is the image of the horizon. Okay, those processes spend a lot of time. But by spreading them out like this, we ergodically load balance. If that didn't happen, we'd have to spend a little time to make sure that we don't spend a lot of time on just a handful of the processes. And the consequence of doing this with a large number of machines is that now we're talking about iBlink timescales. And so that's good. Okay? And that means that it's possible to produce enough images to very densely sample parameter spaces. And here's an example that has about 10,000 images in it. We have 10,000 points on this plane, and then there's 180 such planes. All right? And that gives you an idea of what we're having to resolve these days. We're seeing very small. All right, so just some final remarks. Steps generally in solving ODE, something we all thought was as simple as just plug it into Mathematica and let it go. First, think. All right, lots of ways to recast a given ODE. Some of them are better than others. Don't think too much. Save optimizations for the end when you know what you should be optimizing. Define accuracy explicitly. Simply defining small step size is not the same thing as defining accuracy, and you should come up with external ways to check that. All right, it will be defined implicitly otherwise. Spend time where it matters. Ignore where portions of the problem where it doesn't matter. In my case, that's all the big space away from the black hole, essentially. And when all else fails, leverage lots of computers. That's sort of a glib statement because not all problems are easily parallelizable, but at least mine is. It's the reason for GPU. All right, thank you.